once you file a lawsuit, you haven't given up total control of the process, but you've given up a great deal of control to the court or to an arbitrator.
Welcome, construction industry professionals. You're listening to The Art of Construction, specifically designed for contractors and architects to grow your business. Here are your hosts, Devin and Kevin.
So I'm really excited about this show. Kevin is a good friend of mine that I'm going to tell you, he's not billable hours on this one. He's doing it. He's working on his business. Tom Walsh, who's the attorney for Mountain View Window and Door, and also a great friend of mine that I've got to really know inside the business as well as outside the business and really just growing each other in this community. And he's really becoming a name in the community from doing everything the right way. So I'm excited to have a chat and kind of tell a few stories about my business and maybe peel back a few layers on contractors and architects. Information is what you pay for, and attorneys usually charge a lot, and this one doesn't cost you much, right?
No, and absolutely. You always talk about how important it is to have a key group of advisors around you, and I think that's critical in business. I remember that, you know, when I had my general contracting business, one of our attorneys was the most important ingredient that we had in the mix, and it's because it's such a key part of the whole idea of what you need to do to safely operate in business, and having somebody that you can really rely on, because things come up, you know, that you don't plan on. People do things that you don't plan on that you need to have moves in place, have actions to take place after that. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing what Tom has to say and how he helped you in the purchase of your business and then taking a look at some of those other things that are out in the marketplace right now.
So I'm always talking about surround yourself with good people. This is one of my top dogs. Jump in and have a fireside chat with Tom Walsh.
Here we go.
What's your favorite beverage?
That'd be a Yingling Lager. It's America's oldest brewery.
Isn't there something about them with the microbrewery or something?
Yeah, because of a change in definition, they're now the largest craft brewer in the country.
It's apparently, that's Yingling out here. It's like people haven't heard of it, but then the people that have it always gets brought into this largest craft brewery.
And where's it from? Where's the home base?
Pottsville, Pennsylvania.
Pottsville.
And you can't get it west of the Mississippi, but they're now the largest craft brewer in the country.
So, and then everyone wants to bring Yingling out here because it's like Coors when I hear
back
in the day
when
they come out to Colorado, they have to bring back Coors.
It's more nostalgic, I'd say, just because you can't get it here.
Now, what's the one in Pennsylvania that's got the green bottle that people are a little more familiar with?
Rolling Rock.
Rolling Rock, there you go. Not a craft brew, but
no,
still just kind
not
of...
Not at all, no.
That's the college beer, isn't it?
That's pretty much...
That's a college beer.
What's your favorite... Yeah, what's your favorite place you've traveled?
Probably be Thailand.
Wow.
My sister taught English in Bangkok. 2007, and my wife and I went over there for a week, and it was like going to a different planet. But the beaches were amazing, just incredibly clear water, beautiful islands, and awesome food.
Nice. What's your favorite hobby?
Probably the Irish sports community in Denver, playing Irish sports. Been playing Irish sports for about 6 years now. It's good exercise and it's a good group of people.
Yeah, I think we need to elaborate a little bit on that because Tom Walsh, who's a friend of mine, got me into the Gaelic sports, which I picked up hurling, and that's what I chose to just do. Hurling, not curling. Right?
No. When the Winter Olympics come around, I cringe because curling is more famous. And hurling is a lot like, it's a mix of lacrosse and field hockey, so it's a very fast-moving sport. You know, the ball is the size of a baseball, a little bit softer. You just basically have an axe, a wooden axe that you swing with, and it's a great sport.
Yeah, it's a really unique sport that I fell in love with immediately because it's kind of a mixture of if you grew up playing, you know, rugby and football and soccer and basketball, or if you're kind of, it's like mixing all those together. And it still has a little bit of roughhousing to
absolutely
get it out of your system.
Absolutely, yeah.
Cool. So Tom Walsh, who is a good friend of mine and our attorney at Mountain View Window and Door, and kind of does all of our general practice and helping. The thing I wanted to have Tom on the show about is that he was the most important person with me buying my company and really setting my company up for success. And I wanted to have him in here and kind of talk through a few maybe strengths and pitfalls and things that you see happening out there. If you're out there as a contractor and maybe working for someone else and you want to buy them out or maybe start your own business, Tom Walsh is very knowledgeable and very helpful with that. So introduce yourself about your company and what you practice in on the attorney or law side with Tom Walsh.
So, yeah, thanks, Devin. I've been practicing for about 5 years now. I'm a solo practitioner. I work with business clients on general corporate matters, setting up businesses, buying businesses, succession planning, and then I'll also do some civil litigation, breach of contract, business disputes between owners, and those type of cases. I don't have a billboard. I don't have a nickname.
So you're not the heavy hitter or someone who's got a little nickname?
The bulldog or the strong arm or no. I leave that to more qualified individuals.
Tom Walsh is the name, and that's the game. And he, I think you've really developed your business around just getting in with word of mouth and helping a business like Mountain View. And I mean, it's like a part-time job within your business and managing all of who's the people along the way, and especially growing companies like ours. There's always something that he gets to help us out with, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's it's kind of a longer-term process for building your business, but it's I think it's important with the type of services that attorneys provide to have that personal touch.
And I kind of want to go back to the beginning. It's like before, you know, Tom and I became friends through outside of work relation, and then we got to play hurling together and went on some trips, and that's where the friendship really grew. And then it was, all right, now I'm looking to buy this business. Before I met Tom, it was like the word attorney was like, I'm just not even going to go down that road because that's just a lot of money I'm going to spend, and they're just greedy attorneys. The strong arm's going to come take all my money. It was so different with Tom. He charges a fair price, but it's the best money that we've ever spent because he's seen all the problems along the way. I shouldn't say all the problems, but he's seen a lot of stuff along the way to where he can advise you and stuff that you think is going to be this big process, like setting up a corporation or an LLC you think is this big deal, and that's just a few documents that he can help with. And then stuff that you're not thinking about, how important it is as far as setting up the contract and how you lay that out with a plan to where your attorney kind of understands the business you want to start or you want to buy and where you're going with that. So Tom really learned where I wanted to go with my company and then helped set up when I bought a little company that worked out really well with Tom's help. So any advice you want to give the building industry, especially contractors and architects listening to this show, kind of if you just want to start or buy a business, if you, buying a business or starting a business 101?
Yeah, I'd say, the main point of the decision-making process for whether you're going to start a business or buy a business is going to be, it's going to be cost and time. It might be a little bit less expensive to start your own business yourself, but, it's going to take a lot of time to develop your business, your reputation, your brand, your network. Whereas if you buy an existing business, you're able to, hopefully you're buying a good enough business with a good enough reputation. You're stepping into the shoes of a successful business. The challenges of building the business or getting that customer base is a little bit less of an issue, but at the same time, it's probably going to cost you, a few grand or few hundred thousand.
And we're always talking about on this show is time is money, right?
Absolutely.
In buying a business, you're buying a lot of time that was put into that business. But how do you craft that with your attorney to where you're capturing that time properly, and what you're paying for, you get something back out of that? And I can guarantee you, since I bought a business, it's kind of a hot button that people are always asking me about and want to get my advice on buying a business. The whole buying a book of business and all that stuff, you got to factor that in for what it's worth. you know. And Tom also advised me on a holdback, which was something I would highly recommend after going through this, where I didn't probably structure that best I should, and you know, surround yourself with good people and take their advice. And if you want to kind of elaborate on how a holdback works, if you want to buy a business, because I think that's a really key part of the negotiations on kind of pay now, pay later, how that all works to structure it for both the buyer and the seller are taken care of properly.
Right. So the seller and the buyer, they have two different goals. The seller, ideally, they want to get the most amount of money on the closing date, and they want to, you know, go on their vacation, go, you know, do something else with their life, you know, buy that vacation home. They want, generally want to be out. The buyer, on the other hand, you know, obviously they're when they're looking at the business and doing their due diligence, they're saying, okay, you know, this looks good, these financials look good, this customer list, you know, good strong history there. But you know, you're a little bit skeptical. You know, you're a little worried that the seller is overstating the value of the company, and you ideally want to be able to keep in touch with the seller after you acquire the business, just for that transition period, whether it's 6 months, a year, or more. And you know, that'll depend on your ability to manage the business, you know, and how complicated the industry is. Buyers will often ask for a holdback, or sometimes it might be referred to as an earnout, saying, okay, you know, instead of paying you this lump sum of money today, I will pay you X amount now. I will pay you, you know, another percentage within 6 months. I'll pay you another percentage in a year. And those percentages will adjust based on the performance of the company, your level of engagement with the company, if you're expecting the seller to stay on for a bit. That's just a way of protecting yourself, to making sure the asset you think you're buying is what you're actually getting.
All right, so let's do a little role play. I want to buy a business from Kevin. What's the first thing I do?
Ideally, you want to get a team in place. You know, as you touched on before, I think a lot of people are concerned about the expense of bringing on an attorney or an accountant. You know, but those two can be very powerful tools, and especially if you're spending, you know, over $100,000 to buy a business, you know, you want an accountant who's able to read and understand the financial statements of the company. You know, you can tell a lot just from how well the books of the company are kept. And then your lawyer will be able to help you identify any potential claims against the company that you're looking to buy, because the last thing you want to do when you're buying a company is you're stepping into a lawsuit. And there's ways to protect yourself that your attorney can help you with, whether that's you're doing a stock sale, which is, you know, you're just stepping into the shoes of the seller, you're taking the company, warts and all. Or, you know, if you're the buyer, you'd probably like to take a more conservative approach and do an asset purchase agreement, where you're only purchasing a certain number of enumerated and identified assets.
Okay.
Because it sounds to me, Tom, like what you're talking about is really cost avoidance, you know, surprises, avoiding those surprises, by hiring yourself or somebody like yourself, as well as a CPA or an accountant, to be able to go in and see kind of what the lay of the land is, so that you understand what you're buying. So you're going to pay a little now, but with the idea, I'm presuming, of avoiding a situation where you buy a company because you avoided spending all that up front on you and or an accountant. You go in and buy the company, and then you find out that your income isn't what you thought, meaning it's lower, and your expenses are higher because you have some liability out there. So it just seems to me to make a lot of sense, if anybody out there listening is going to be serious about this, that this is a pretty small cost to pay as a real serious insurance policy to get yourself and a CPA involved at the beginning of the process.
Definitely. Decided I got my accountant. He's looked at the books. It makes sense. I've hired Tom Walsh as my attorney. Overall, like globally, as attorneys, is it more just here's my hourly fee and I do that, retainers? What's the standard practice for someone, I want to buy a business from Kevin, to budget going into this, to buy this business, where I'm going to try to get a loan to buy this business, and I'm just a guy saying, I don't have the money, I need to learn a loan, but I need an attorney to look at this before it makes sense. How do you and I cover the cost of that typically?
Usually it's done on an hourly fee basis, just because as the process goes on and you get more and more familiar with the company you're buying, new issues might pop up, and that might change the scope of the negotiations, because you'll probably start with your letter of intent. That's a very broad, I'm looking to purchase.
So that's the next step. So the letter of intent is usually done in conjunction with your attorney in most cases, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, so I've got that part. So I'm paying Tom an hourly fee. I have my accountant that's done my personal stuff, and he also does business. So I have my account set up, my attorney set up. I say, Kevin and I have said, I'm interested in this business. I want to buy it. The next step is the letter of intent, which is our intentions of what we're going to pay to buy this business before the due diligence, correct?
Right, and with the letter of intent, you might pay a deposit, some amount of money that seems reasonable to, maybe make yourself an exclusive buyer. So you have an exclusive period of time to negotiate with the seller. Benefits to you is, you get that time where you're the only person looking to buy the business. You're not competing against anyone. But at the same time, it can certainly compress the amount of time that the attorneys have to work on your case and drafting up the documents. It may be a little bit more expensive, but with this entire process, it's a matter of you can spend a lot of money up front and potentially save yourself money down the road.
Part of the process as I was going through that, Tom was the most important person buying the business because he was the general, knew all this paperwork and how to set this up. But the other part, in conjunction with your attorney, your advisory council is so important. And your advisory council should be people kind of like you in different practices, meaning I'm looking at buying a window and door company. I should have someone who's in the construction industry on my advisory council, because Tom is dealing with all businesses of all realms. You should have people that know how to speak window and door, that have maybe bought a window and door company, and in that focus. And how do you find that? Well, you got to find what you love and then find people around there that have a similar passion. So when you say your team, your advisory council is a very key part with your finances and all that stuff to put that together. So as Tom is the most important person, you can't rely on your attorney to just do everything, because they physically they can't know everything about your business. You have to do, that letter of intent. You have to know what you're getting into. As Tom and I have been looking at maybe purchasing a door shop or doing some other ventures, I'm not relying on Tom to know the equipment and know that part. I'm trying myself to handle that part, but I'm expecting Tom to help me making sure the paperwork and setting us all up for success. So I think that's important to know your team. Don't rely too much on your attorney as well, because I see people that don't know anything about the construction industry and they just say, it's all about paper and their attorney does it all right on paper. But then in practice, they don't know anything about it. And I think I see businesses tank when they buy a business they know nothing about. It's your job, if you're going to be the person to buy the business, to know what you're buying.
That's a really good point. You got to be.
I'm buying from Kevin, and I think I feel really good about it. Got through the process, so then the accountant and the attorney, everyone's going to look at the books and basically make sure all the equipment is what it is, the vehicles are what they are. So all the documents that I was given from Kevin selling this company, we've checked them with my advisory council, my attorney, all the good people I've surrounded myself with, and it all makes sense. Now we want to buy it. It's just a matter of fulfilling the contract at that point, right?
Well, I think at that point, that's where you really get into the details of what, the structure of the contract, whether it's going to be the asset deal or the stock deal. And, it's most cases, if you're going to use, for example, an SBA loan, you're probably going to have to do an asset deal, SBA loan being a small business association loan.
And that's what I did for buying the company. And just a fair warning, the SBA, the terms are great, because I have bought buildings and companies where you do a conventional loan, you're usually in a 5-10 year note, and that can get pulled after 5 years if your business is going up or down. It can be a big problem child. So SBA if you're going to buy a business, is nice because you can get upwards of 20-year terms and a nice interest rate. But the front-end stuff is a lot more paperwork and a lot more hoops to go through, and it really corners you of what how you can do that. So the buyer and the seller both have to be really working well together. If you ask me, when someone says, what kind of loan should I do, is do you recommend an SBA loan? And the first thing I say back to them when I'm advising them is say, how's the relationship going with you and the seller? Because are you guys both on board and both feeling really good about that? The SBA, you're going to have paperwork after paperwork that you're going to have to go through to get that done. And if it's not a good working relationship, that can be a challenge.
Well, and along with that paperwork, I would imagine come time delays, which is one of the reasons you need cooperation on both sides.
Correct. Yeah. Yep.
And you want to make sure that the attorney has done deals that are with the SBA before, because they have their very set list of requirements for all of their transactions. It doesn't vary much, I think, from deal to deal. You know, you just want to make sure your attorney is familiar with those, because that'll save a lot of time.
Yeah, for sure. What is the most unique project or case you've been on without divulging names or stuff like that, that give us a cool attorney story?
Yeah, a couple lately have been related to, on this topic of buying businesses, where, you know, either the parties did not use an attorney at all, and they are now in litigation. One issue with that deal in particular is that the seller sold to the buyer a number of trucks, and the buyer never changed title of the vehicles. So the trucks are still in the name of the seller. Buyer has been operating this business for 2 or 3 years with these trucks out on the road. Thankfully, they have not been in any accidents, but they did rack up parking tolls, interstate tolls, and parking fines that get sent back to the seller. You know, the seller thought, hey, I'm done with these. I don't have to worry about them. There, have at it. And he's getting bills in the mail, you know, upwards of $3,000 worth of tolls and fines. Another deal where there were attorneys in place, maybe a few months after the documents were signed, the parties just stopped following how the agreements worked, and now it's a complete mess, just complete and utter mess.
What would be your suggestion on a little detail like that with these tolls and fines? Is that part of the contract where you have to get the title done before you close, or how do you, instances like that, as I want to buy a bunch of trucks from Kevin, what should we do to eliminate something like that?
Yeah, I think you want to, at the time of closing, you want to have all the vehicles identified. You want to have the registrations, the VIN numbers, makes, models, all of that. If you're the seller, even if you're not specifically required to under the agreement, you want to get rid of those trucks. So you want to make sure you have all that paperwork lined up, and at the closing, the buyer can execute whatever documents need to be signed in order to effect the transfer. And alternatively, there's what we're doing in the case I've mentioned is there's a way to go through the court system to basically force a transfer of title. The seller is having to go through that process, you know, 2 years after they sold the trucks, and it's just a headache for them.
Well, and then you described, too, to resolve this, they're going through litigation, which is the most expensive process you can go through in the legal system. So, you know, in addition to what we talked about earlier about foregoing costs later for now, I mean, you're also looking at not only a reduction of income to consider and maybe increased expenses, but then you're dealing with litigation on top of that, which just seems absolutely avoidable.
And that's the part where you trust your attorney. Like, it's funny when I hear this story you're talking about as an example, I go back to, I remember seeing like 2 pages of, and it was, you know, the sale went great, but it was getting the VIN numbers and getting all that stuff to dot the I's and cross the T's, and Tom's like, no, you guys can't sign that until you get all that done, because that little stuff can burn you. And didn't have any problems with vehicles because it all was spelled out in the contract and what company was going to take the name. We had the business set up, so I went in with all the proper documentation to transfer and license plates and all that stuff that if you are starting or buying a company, it's what are all these hidden costs up front you got to come up with money-wise to pull this all off? Those are the things that, man, it's scary, but you got to do the budget and put stuff in on those vehicles. What does it cost for taxes and insurance and license plates on all these vehicles? That was stuff I just like, just get it done. It's just like, oh, shit, now it's put it on the credit card and go sell more, you know?
One way you're going to protect yourself if you're the buyer is you'll require the seller to make several representations and warranties, basically stating that they have the authority to enter into this agreement, that they have good title to all of the assets that they are saying that they are transferring to you. And there's a number of representations that you'll want to make sure that the seller makes. That's just really, you know, your ability to go back to them if there is an issue down the road to say, hey, you said that you owned this truck. Well, you didn't tell me that there was a lease on the truck.
Yeah. Or that it's owned by Aunt Millie and not really the seller.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, Tom, one of the things Devin's described how much you've helped him purchase this business, and it's part of the reason I think from looking at your website, you've now won an award recently. Maybe you can talk to our audience a little bit about that and kind of what that means in your world.
Well, we just redid our website, and so thanks for noticing that. And so recently, Super Lawyers Magazine named me a Rising Star for 2015.
Nice.
Except 5 or 7% of all attorneys are recognized by that publication. That might not be accurate, but that's a great honor, and
I couldn't agree more with them. You deserve it. You've really worked hard on this community. You've given back to this community. I mean, every time I want to go to happy hour with Tom, it's always you were the president of the Denver Gales, the local hurling and Gaelic football team for a while now. I think you're the secretary, but you're also involved with several other organizations. Any of those you want to tell us about?
So Irish Network Colorado, which is a professional just networking organization that connects Denver with, or Colorado with Ireland. Been involved with that for a number of years. Also been a member of the Rotary Club in Five Points, which has been a very interesting experience. It's been a really great experience. It's not your typical Rotary Club. Half of our members, at least, are women. Most of our members are in their 30s and 40s. We have a lot of fun, a lot of events involving food trucks and at local restaurants and breweries, so it's been a great, and we do a lot of great service projects as well.
So on the flip side of the most unique, what's the most challenging project that you've done in the past 12 months?
Actually, a case I'm working on now, and it's a case where a guy left his business. He was an employee and also part owner of the business, a small percentage owner. And there's a dispute with the company over the way that he left. The challenges there have been the amount of litigation that has been involved in the last 2 weeks has been just shocking. I'm not clear how much money the company has spent on lawyers. Litigation can be challenging just because the way it works is, you know, a dispute might happen, you know, an invoice doesn't get paid or someone gets terminated, and then, you know, you might hire attorneys and then they will take, it'll either go one of two ways. You'll either engage in settlement discussions, negotiations, and things might get smoothly resolved and you're in control of the process. The parties control that negotiation. You know, once you file a lawsuit, you haven't given up total control of the process, but you've given up a great deal of control to the court or to an arbitrator. And that's going to, with that loss of control means you're going to be spending, you know, additional sums of money just maintaining the case, making sure it's moving forward, conducting discovery. Litigation is always challenging because it's a balance between, you know, what's the fair result versus what's it going to cost to get that fair result. The litigation process is basically designed to beat people down and encourage settlements.
So I always have to tell a story on each show, and that's a perfect lead-in to, once you get into litigation, there's a lot of people that can make decisions, and it's swaying those one way or the other. And one of the first doors I sold when I bought the company, it was just a single door, and I'm not going to get into the details of the door, but the door went south. We had done everything right, and I was like, well, I'm just going to go to small claims court to go through this process. You know, Tom, I'm just going to handle this for myself because it's just one $2,000 door, and if it goes south, it goes south. And because I wanted to learn the process. And I think it's important to you learn by doing and going through that. And I'll tell you what I learned by going through this at the end. But one door, get in there, and they assign you in small claims court a mediator. You have to go straight to mediation. If you've never went through the small claims court thing and you think you go in there and you're just going to hash it out and be done, no. It's you go in there and you go to mediation, and they hope you can mediate it before it actually goes to the court. Well, if you cannot go through mediation, then it goes to court. Well, this one, I was the plaintiff and she was the defendant. Right? Yes. So I'm the plaintiff and I would make a deal, and then from what the defendant said, and after the third time, I would accept the deal, and then she would go back and come to find out her daughter was there with her, who was an attorney, and they were just kept fishing for more and more and more and more. And long story short, that's just exactly what they were doing. I found out after that it's just a laundry list of small claims court, you know, tickets this person had been in. But the reason I tell that story is because I went through it and I understand how that works. And what I've understood since then, I've never been in the courtroom, and knock on wood, Tom has always done the mediation. So much time is money, and has worked through any bump in the road by getting my attorney involved that's not emotional like we are about it, and he works that out with the other party. He's done that every single time since then, and I've never been in the courtroom and hope to never be in the courtroom again for allowing him to do that portion of my business.
Yeah, the courtroom, I think, is about the last place you really want to be unless you're going through a tour of, Washington, D.C. or something. I mean, that's the last place you want to be because of the cost and the time and the agony and frustration and everything else, right?
Right, absolutely, yeah. I mean, I just got done with a case last week, and it was a case before a judge, and it was a pretty short case. It was, 4 hours, and we won't get a verdict for probably a month. So
it's such a long process. And that's the whole goal of this show, right? Is to give somebody some marketing gold or something to help them with their business so that they don't have these mistakes. And Kevin, I think you've been in the courtroom. We've talked to this with different insurance and different people who've had in Studio NBWD. What are some of the things you've learned as a builder back in the day with your attorneys?
Well, the money that you spend up front, it's very much like what we talk about in terms of design. You know, it's a lot cheaper in the long run to spend the money up front than it is to spend the money in the middle of the process. And so in the legal process, whatever it costs to pay your attorney to draw up the contracts and make sure all the terms and conditions are right and all those I's are dotted and T's are crossed is about one-tenth the cost it's going to be if you ever end up in litigation. So that whole idea of litigation avoidance and proper planning is gold. That is gold in and of itself. You will save agony, you'll save money, you'll get the right result. So you can focus on really what you intended to do in the first place. Nobody goes into these things with the idea that, oh, yeah, I'm going to be in court. I can't wait to go swing a bat in the middle of the courtroom. That's not what you're trying to do, but that's where you end up if you're not careful. So that's what I've learned.
Yeah, and people are always asking me, Devin, how do you get all this stuff done? And the reason is back to the beginning of the show. It's surround yourself with good people, do what you do really well, and get out of the way. And I hope some of these stories I've talked to you about, it makes you say, find your Tom Walsh wherever you are. And if you're in Denver, Colorado, and want to buy or look for a business, he'd be the first one I'd get you in touch with. Climb the ladder and make your business successful like Tom has helped us. So thank you very much for everything, Tom.
No, thank you, guys. And I think most of the credit goes to you guys for all the effort you've put in, because this business today is completely different from the business you purchased, and in so many positive, wonderful ways.
Well, every seed has to grow, and just like this Art of Construction, from one little show, we keep peeling back the layers, and I think we've pulled back a few more, huh?
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming in.
Well, Devin, just like you expected, Tom had some great points of advice for our listening audience in terms of how to not only stay out of trouble, but really how to focus on what you intended to focus on, which is a business plan.
I wanted to lay out the plan, because when I was going through buying a business, it was like, I thank God I had Tom Walsh to kind of do that part for me, but I think it's fun to hear how that process works. What's the end game if you're thinking about going through that? And I think everybody has aspirations of, you know, buying or starting a business or doing something additional. So I hope everybody got a lot of good information out of that, and maybe talk through a few bumps in the road to, if you decide to do something like that, saves you a few bucks.
I think it can save you your business, really, because, you know, think of that one example of the people that he was talking about that transferred a business and yet the vehicles didn't get transferred, and they racked up thousands of dollars worth of tickets and fines and toll fees, etc. And, you know, while on the one hand that may be resolved and may not be a huge factor, but, you know, a couple years after you go through the process, sell the business to a buyer, you think you're done, and you find out you're not, it's not too pretty.
And it's all about, you know, working on your business and working in your business and do what you do really well. And that's what we're trying to really portray and really grow this show by, you know, day to day. Kevin and I speak window and door very well. But if something goes south, and it's not a matter of if, it's when something happens. But how you excel and grow is how you take care of it. And nowadays, when I get an issue like that, it's just forward to Tom, and he advises me and is looking out for our best interests. So as a small business owner, you have to have somebody like Tom Walsh that has your back in conjunction with the rest of your advisory council, because Tom handles all that day-to-day standard stuff. But if it's a specific example in the industry, I know who has my back and I have their back, and we help each other out. Like I say, it's not a matter of if, it's when. So make sure you have a team set up.
Absolutely, because you can't control what other people do. I mean, anybody essentially can sue somebody, and if for nothing else, you may think and may operate a perfectly great business and do everything by the letter of the law, it still doesn't prevent somebody from suing you, and you need to be prepared, and particularly on the front side, making sure that you don't accidentally walk into a problem situation where you can be sued because of something you did. Tom can help you avoid that too, which is very, very good way to spend your money well and avoid trouble in the long run, a lot of money in the long run.
So thanks a lot for Tom for giving us his time and really helping with the show. And, you know, we release these every other week, and Kevin and I are sitting in here talking through this microphone, and you contractors and architects and industry partners out there listening to us. We know you're listening because we go to networking events and get all this
people
great
are talking
feedback.
About it, yeah.
But the way iTunes and the infamous world and all that stuff, it's all about reviews and subscribing. And we've really worked hard in-house with Desiree, who does all of our marketing in-house, to really try to make these shows timeless, but give you good pictures and content to follow up with on the message board, where Kevin manages putting together all that content with our guests, and then Desiree makes it all pretty on our website. And on that message board, I really, if you have a question as you're listening to these, and if maybe isn't today you have an issue with Tom, but tomorrow you need an issue, you want to reach out to Tom. And if you wait till tomorrow, you may not have the relationship then. So I would strongly encourage with you getting on the message board with Tom today. Get your business set up with him if you don't have, you know, an attorney or part of your advisory council, and use that message board that we're putting this out there for you to grow your business. And the people that have feedback, you know, we really appreciate. Read a couple of those last ones off of iTunes for us, Kevin.
Yeah, so here's this one review that just came in recently, Devin, by Longville One. He says, he just came across you guys and love your podcast show. Listened to it, loved it, and found it very helpful. It's good to understand how professionals can learn to work more effectively together. It's a win-win for all involved. Keep the good interviews going. So we really appreciate that. And that's really kind of a summary of what we're trying to accomplish here for the listeners out there on our podcast.
Marketing gold for us to hear, you know, our message is
absolutely
being portrayed, what the hope is, what we want to do. Roger CO says, excellent podcast with great content. I have found the information from the podcast to be helpful for our business. That's what it's all about. Absolutely. Contractors and architects, growing your business one show at a time, fixing one problem before it happens to grow your business and make it that much stronger. Thanks everyone for tuning in.
Until next time.
You have been listening to The Art of Construction. To listen to more, please go to www.mtnview.us and click on the podcast tab. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, and thanks for listening.